chance to have a dream to open and run a bakery. But they took a chance, took the sweets to the street. Now they all have places where I'd love to eat.
Hello there, bakeroos and bakerettes. Welcome to the Rise Up Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Dick, and this is the show about bakers and bakeries and bakery owners and all the folks that work so hard, often through the night, to make the good stuff and share it with the people in their community. How are you this week? It's great to be talking with you again. Today on the show, I have a really fun conversation to share with you. There's three of us on two screens in one Zoom room talking about bread and about baking and about cooking and about books and about bakeries. It's fun. It's Natasha and Ed Tatton of Ed's Bread in Whistler, BC. And now, you know, veterans of the show, veteran listeners here can say, hey, Mark, Ed's been on before, hasn't he? Yeah, he was on a couple of years ago, but I haven't had a chance to talk to Natasha before. And today, on the day that this podcast goes out, they're launching their brand new cookbook. It's called Bread, the Cookbook. And it's an amazing book about baking, about sourdough baking, about plant-based baking exclusively, and about the story of Natasha and Ed and their travels and their bakery up in Whistler. And so it's really cool. And it was a lot of fun to talk with them and get an update on the past 2 years, because I'm sure nothing's changed in 2 years, right? And just hear about their whole story with the bakery and this book coming out. So that's a pile of fun. It's coming up in just a few minutes. Before then, how about some news and some updates and that kind of thing? I've been quiet for a while. I've been working on ideas for a new season. The main thing I've been doing, to be honest with you, is changing jobs, changing work, that kind of a thing. That's been a big deal. If you've been listening for a while, you know I've been working as a baker at a coffee shop here in Victoria for the last year. And on October 13th, that came to an end. I decided it was time to move on and do something different. Still figuring out what that different is. But in the couple of weeks since I left the coffee shop, I've been kind of cleaning things up. I've been cleaning up some loose ends with the podcast and with the Bakers for Bakers community. I've been fixing up some things, trying to get some things recharged. Restarting a few projects that have been sort of just languishing for a few months. And so that's been good. That's been good. I've even been writing a bit, not like what Natasha and Ed are doing, but just, you know, writing in general, but it's been good. So it's been a good few weeks. I left the coffee shop, well early enough and with lots of notice, so I can still be friends with Kelly and Lindsay, who run the place, and with the folks that are there, which I think is a good thing. It's because I do love that place, and I'll be going as a customer instead of as an employee from now on. What else is going on? Oh, I've got an announcement, a real live announcement of a thing that I'm doing that's coming up in a couple of weeks. On November 14th, I'm giving a webinar as part of the Baking Association of Canada. It's based on the talk that I gave back in May at the bakery showcase, and the talk is called Telling the Story of Your Bakery. And we're going to talk in webinar format online about telling your story and getting your story out in the world and how you're going to tell it and who you're going to tell it to and why I think it's really, really important that you take an intentional approach to getting the story of your bakery out in the world with people that want to hear it. And so we talk about that, and there's going to be time for Q&A, and it's free. That's the other cool thing. And so for folks that weren't able to make it to Vancouver that might have an interest in this, I'm going to leave a link in the podcast description and on the riseuppod.com website that you can go and register for this webinar. And it's going to be recorded, but if you want to get the recording, you need to sign up and register. So that's fun. And I want to just say thanks to Colleen Cross, who runs the Baker's Journal magazine that's kind of puts the webinars together. And of course, to Martin Barnett at the Baking Association of Canada and to Leah Hayward, who's helping there. as well. I think they do good work, and they're working hard to try and make connections amongst bakers across Canada. So a little plug for them. Would love to see you on the Zoom call. It's only 1 week away now till this talk, so I'm solidly in the mindset of three people are going to show up, me, Martin, and Colleen, and I'll be speaking into the void. So if you came, it'd be nice to have a friendly audience. It would be nice to see you there. So that's coming up in a week. What else do I have to share with you? Well, and I do want to put a plug in, like I do almost every show, for the Bakers for Bakers community. That's bakers, the number 4bakers.org. It's a free international community of professional bakers and bakery owners that get together and share what they know and ask questions and help each other out. And in a very kind and supportive way. I'm really energized by the folks that are in the community that are getting help from each other on an almost daily basis. So, you know, there are folks that are building out their first bakery. There are folks that are rejigging their second bakery. There are people that are troubleshooting croissants. That seems to be the ongoing longest thread other than welcome to the community is the croissant troubleshooting thread. Lots of folks helping each other and figuring things out. I'd like you to join. If you haven't signed up yet, head on over to Bakers for Bakers. That's Bakers, the number 4bakers.org, and sign up. It's free to join, and we'd love to have you over there. One last thing, just as we slide into the conversation with Natasha and Ed, is I want to talk about Thanksgiving, because we're right at the midpoint between the two Thanksgivings, the original Canadian Thanksgiving that happens second week of October, and the later, hey, that's a good idea, let's do it in 6 weeks Thanksgiving that happens in the United States. We're right at that midpoint. This conversation with Natasha and Ed actually happened on Thanksgiving Monday back in October. That was the time that they had because they are extremely busy with the launch of this book and running the bakery. And so, yeah, so we got together on Thanksgiving Monday and had our conversation there. And then this book that they've written, Bread the Cookbook, is coming out on November 7th, which means if you are American and want to just really impress your relations with some plant-based Thanksgiving fare, get the book now. Get the book. You got 2 weeks. You can study. You can try some things out, and you can put on a big spread, a real plant-based Thanksgiving dinner with all the fixings, thanks to inspiration from Bread the Cookbook. So yeah, so give that a try. And if you do, let me know how it goes. Send me an email. I'd love to hear from you. Okay, Ed and Natasha, full of energy, but what I like about them, and I'm going to talk about more about this after, I like their directed energy. Like they want to go down a path and they go and they put in the work and they've got this real laser focus about let's get this done. That's what happened when they started Bread in Whistler. Ed's Bread's 100% plant-based bakery, you know, with all the pastries and all the treats, all plant-based. They have put together an incredible cookbook, and we talk about the work involved and the effort involved to put that together. And they kept the bakery going and thriving, you know, through the pandemic, through this kind of greedflation stage that we're in post-pandemic, and they're still making it go. And so I got a lot of admiration for them. I don't want to give away the ending already. Let's have the talk. Natasha and Ed Tatton, authors of Bread the Cookbook. That's B-R-E-D. And I just realized it's bread. There's no A in it. Maybe it means because there's no animals in it. I just put that together. I might be the last person to do that. Two great people. Let's have a talk. Hey, Owen, you got it in the background there too. Good for you.
There it is.
That's what I was saying. I just had to run back to the bakery to get it.
Well, I was gonna ask you. So, what do you guys do for Thanksgiving? But it sounds like photos.
Yeah, we're doing video shooting and interviews today.
Yeah, right on.
Here we just shot 5 hours at the bakery today already.
Good Lord. Wow.
Yeah, filming the cinnamon buns.
And what was that for?
For our launch in London, for the book launch. But then we're also going to put that on YouTube as well.
It was a cooking demo of sourdough cinnamon buns. And then like a welcome video. And then another video on like, it's launch day, buy the book kind of thing. scheduling content.
Yeah, for sure. Well, thanks for doing this for sure. And congratulations. It's a pretty serious undertaking what you two have done over the last while here. So
we obviously like working.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, so I'm curious, with all of this going on, you know, with building up to the launch and getting ready to go in a couple of weeks' time here, what's the bakery itself been like the last while? Like, I think it's been a couple of years since we talked.
Yeah, totally. We're definitely like, it goes in waves, you know, with regards to finding staff and everything like that. But we've just come out of one of the busiest weekends of the whole year. Thanksgiving weekend is, you know, especially because it was nice and sunny. So we have a lot of day trippers and people here seeing family and friends. So Christmas time tends to build slowly and you kind of gradually increase your prep and production. Whereas Thanksgiving, you're basically doing, it just spikes. You're going really, really quiet because there's no sort of, it's a bit rainy and there's not as much biking. And then it comes out of nowhere and everyone loves to eat at Thanksgiving. So,
yeah. So what's the go-to at bread for Thanksgiving?
We just did a Thanksgiving loaf, like a sourdough, cranberries, walnuts, pecans, oranges, spices. And that was that pumpkin seeds. That was really, really popular. I think we sold about 85 loaves of just that bread in 2 days.
And then we do like, we call it a tartine, but it's more like a mini pizza, really. And it's like squash. We had roasted squash with like a garlic cream base. And then we had another one that was like roasted beet and apple. And then we did like a sweet brioche that had like a pumpkin creme patisserie with like apple and pecan granola on top. So there was like lots of like festive-y things like that. And all of those things sold really well. Like people eat so seasonally, even if they don't realize they do. They, you know, as soon as it rains, everyone wants hot chocolate. As soon as it's hot, everyone wants an ice drink. Like you can kind of predict what people are going to eat based on the weather and the festive events that are going on.
Totally. I totally noticed that this year down at sea level. It's just, you know, when when September hit and, you know, it got a little bit cooler and all of a sudden the shorts get put away and the puffy coats come out. And, you know, a couple of days later, then somebody's finally, the first toque of the season was seen. Yeah. And then you're, and now you're into pumpkin spice and lots more savory, you know, that kind of thing. Yeah. Yeah, but for sure.
Just move with the seasons.
Yeah. And it's nice not to compete with the ice cream market anymore.
Sure. I guess that's true. There's a couple of places, some folks that I was talking with a couple of weeks ago that exactly that. It's sort of like with ice cream, you either are getting on that train or you're just waiting to ride it out, one or the other.
So. Well, when it's like, you know, 30, 40 degrees, no one wants to eat like baked goods.
Yeah.
No one's thinking of coffee and cinnamon buns.
Yeah.
You know, they're like ice cream and a cold beer.
Yeah.
So neither of which we do at our bakery.
Yeah. Well, and so congrats again on the book. It's a serious undertaking. Like this is a I've been through it, and it's no pamphlet, that's for darn sure. You guys are in it, and I'm curious to know, well, maybe first why before how. What's motivating you to put in the effort to do a book like this, because it's substantial.
Totally. I think it comes from our driving force and our mission of our whole business, really, is that we want people to eat more plant-based food. It's what gets us up in the morning to go and work the long hours at the bakery. So when an opportunity came from Penguin, Canada, One, they're a huge publisher, but also they kind of, it made sense because there are a lot of vegan cooking books out there, you know, and there are some vegan baking books, but no one that's sort of like pushing it a little bit further, more and more now. But when we started writing it a couple of years ago, there wasn't much out there. So we just wanted to write a book that was approachable for the beginner baker, but then also would challenge someone that's been making sourdough for a couple of years or even sort of more an advanced baker.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then it also gives you credibility as well with new customers that don't know you, that haven't heard of you before, and they come in the shop and see you've written a book, and then maybe they're a bit more impressed and a bit more likely to trust you. We find that once people have eaten our products, they usually come back for them and rave about them. But sometimes it can be tricky to get people to make that first purchase. You know, if they've never had a good loaf of organic sourdough before, their perception of what bread is perhaps something cheaper and not as celebrated, you know, just a kind of everyday staple. And then when they eat our bread, they usually go, oh my God, this is like a whole nother level of enjoyment that I never had from a loaf of bread before. And definitely our local customers have said things to us like that, like, I don't eat any other bread now. You guys make the best bread, blah, blah, blah. And I feel like it's because we brought something to the market here in Worcester that wasn't there before. So it was a new experience for them. You know, we're not as lucky or abundant as somewhere like California, San Francisco, that has ample sourdough bakeries. So we filled that niche. And as I said, people, once they get it, they want more of it. They realize it's a good investment.
Yeah. Well, and even for a bread fiend like myself, it's the other baking, the going 100% plant-based with the other baking and saying, okay, we're going to do something without butter, without eggs, without dairy, and it's still going to knock your socks off.
Mm-hmm.
I know for me that's the big one, right? You know, like that would be that's the big one. And
yeah, you're right, because really outside of sort of brioche and those sort of sweet breads, bread is naturally vegan anyway.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I think that's what there's sort of different avenues that will bring people in. Like, oh, they started making sourdough during the pandemic and now they want to sort of be more creative and challenge themselves. And then you've got people that don't even make sourdough that hopefully are just interested in plant-based baking, and there's cakes and cookies in there, or things just to eat with bread, like the dips and spreads.
Well, I'm going to put my feet in the moccasins of the publisher here, but you're really at this kind of convergence point between, you know, fine dining, or let's call it elevated flavors, with your background, both your backgrounds, mm-hmm. and then the converging with sourdough baking and the rise of that, and plant-based and the rise of that, and apologies, that's probably not the right order, but mm-hmm. but it's those three things that I think really came across loud and clear in the book. You know, your use of flavors is well beyond what you're going to see in most baking cookbooks,
mm-hmm.
put it that way. You know, like you say, there are vegan baking cookbooks out there, there's plant-based cookbooks out there, but it's like that combination, it's pretty wild what you put together.
I think you summed it up quite well, in the sense that we know that most people in the world can't travel and come to our bakery. So in essence, what we're trying to do is give those flavors and that intention in the book, so we can share it with people that can't afford to come to Whistler, or, you know, for whatever reason, don't come here. Hope it's bringing our bakery into their home, basically.
Yeah. Well, did I jump over you, Natasha?
I was just thinking about what you were saying about the flavors and elevated food. And I feel like one of the benefits for us in a strange way has been through that pandemic, we did lose our core team and had to rebuild the team. And it also meant when we were very, very short staffed and didn't have any skilled bakers working with Ed for a while, that we had to really simplify some of the menu items to make sure that the staff that we could pull together could make them. So what it ended up doing is we had to create some simplistic recipes, whereas Ed can, he's happy to go very technical and chefy. And so it ended up that now we have this range of repertoire of recipes that are great for either the novice, intermediate or advanced baker. And we just put it all in there. And we've had people say to us like, oh, you're giving all your secrets away. And we're like, no, like if everyone else wants to go out there and try opening an organic sourdough vegan bakery, like go for it. Like if you think this is easy, then have a stab at it. I dare you. I challenge you. But also, if you want to go bake plant-based and bring it to the market, like we support that and we're happy to share the recipes.
Sure, sure. And I guess maybe if talk a little bit about how your travels in the world have kind of influenced the menu and the book, because I saw sort of, okay, here's almost your life story kind of coming through in some of the recipes, but I don't want to put words in your mouth. Totally.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, we're both from the UK, both English. So we bought some of those classics like Cherry Bakewell Tart. And
one of my favorites.
The first Michelin star restaurant I worked in, we had a classic sort of tart to citron, lemon tart. And for me, I was like, well, that's a challenge. That was full of eggs and cream. So I was like, and butter in the pastry. These recipes, some of them, you know, the R&D on them took maybe 10 attempts to get it right. I didn't want to just write a recipe and hope it worked and get a nice photo and then leave people to it. It had to work consistently, like two or three times on that same recipe. So that was a challenge. And then you're right, we've both traveled. Natasha was an English teacher before, so we were fortunate enough to be able to sort of live in Australia and New Zealand, and they have a lot of sort of Asian influence in their cooking and the ingredients they use. And then even being in Canada for the last 10 years, it's still Northern Hemisphere, but it's still there's slight differences in flavors that people enjoy and classic sort of baking that are sort of more Canadian forward.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Well, and the one that got me is on one page I'm reading about a kimchi scone. And then if it wasn't the next page, it's within three pages, I'm reading about the Cherry Bakewell Tart. And I thought, yeah, okay, this, here we go. You know, like we've got the whole realm here, you know, and then like a hummus cookie later on as well. Right. And I'm thinking, okay.
Yes. You mentioned the hummus cookie, because that one is so left field. And when we first came up with it, it was kind of a joke. Like we thought, what could be more vegan than hummus? And people, you know, quite right, they didn't get it at first. They're like, how can you put hummus in a cookie? And we're like, no, it doesn't have the garlic in, it's just got the lemon, the sesame, the chickpea, yeah, the tahini, it's got everything else in it but the garlic. And people are kind of intrigued and they buy it, but then they want it again. And even we haven't made that cookie in the bakery for like 2 or 3 years now, because that one is quite a long process. It's quite simple, but it's a long process, and we don't really have.
Well, when you're making 200 of them, it is.
Yeah. Yeah. We're making the volume that we do, so we've got recipes that are a bit faster to put together now. But people came in just yesterday on Thanksgiving weekend and said, "Have you got the hummus cookie?" And I was like, wow, that was like 3 years ago. And I said, no, but we do have the recipe in our cookbook.
There you go.
That recipe is really cool because it doesn't use like a vegan butter or anything. It uses the olive oil as the fat that you would get, you know, a little bit in hummus. So like Tash said, it's everything but garlic, and then it's even coated in sesame seeds.
Yeah.
So great texture.
Yeah. Well, and then one of the things that I noticed in reading the book was just that, like, because you have a line in there about, well, to paraphrase, about, you know, it's these aren't substitute ingredients anymore. You know, it's like as the quality of ingredients has improved, it's just plain better in many cases now, once you've got the knowledge about what to use in what circumstance and that kind of thing. And I really liked that. It wasn't yes, there was a, you know, you can't write a plant-based cookbook without a little bit of justification for, you know, why this is might be, I don't know, ethically better and better for you. But also it's like it's functionally can be better. it technically can be better. And I thought that was really powerful, because when I read that in the intro, now I'm starting to read the recipes and I'm not noticing these as substitutions, or I'm trying my darndest not to notice them as substitutions. Is that, no, this is the way, right? Yeah, I thought that was really cool.
Yeah. That was one thing that I always, when I was at Alta Bistro, the restaurant I was there, a sous chef in Whistler, when I was going vegan, I remember substituting like creme fraiche for like a macadamia cream. And with the creme fraiche, it kind of, the dairy coats your taste buds. Whereas using a nut cream, you get that same viscosity texture, but you also get all these nutty flavors and the flavor from the soup that you're putting it with. So for me, it was kind of an awakening. I was like, I was on my vegan journey, but I was like, I just was like, this is incredible. This is far superior to dairy, because I'm not just getting the texture, I'm also getting all this flavor.
Yeah, absolutely. And I appreciated those sections of the book to help me understand that. Cause well, since we talked, I went on an elimination diet for 8 weeks, this past winter. And cut out a lot of things, looking for different health reasons and stuff. And it took me a while and a lot of patience from Cindy and a lot of help from her to kind of navigate through getting rid of some things. Some things were super easy and some things were very difficult to get through my head. And so when I was reading through the book, it was sort of like, oh, okay, I'm going to go back and revisit a couple of things now in terms of some of the plant-based cheeses. Was the one that really grabbed me specifically, like, because I was not finding the good stuff. And so I just said, okay, for 8 weeks, I'm just not going to eat cheese. And that's how I solved it. And this isn't, and again, what came across in the book was here's some alternatives, like with your ricotta recipe and that it's like, it's not a replacement. This is really good thing that you can use instead of, right? And I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, I hear it more and more. People like, oh, I'd go vegan, but like, I have people message me, but I don't want all that extra stuff that's in vegan butter or vegan.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So if you're making it yourself, you know exactly what's going in there. It's pretty much like nuts and water and some garlic, nutritional yeast, you know, a little bit of seasoning. Yeah. And it's like, there's no funny stuff in there. It's just like a few, like you said, just techniques to help.
Yeah. 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 A bit of a process to bring the flavors out, or to maybe to bring a property out, but it's like learning a new way to cook, you know. It's mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Well, and so then I guess it kind of leads into a little bit of, I'm curious who you're hoping, like, who's the book for? Who are you hoping is going to latch on to this?
Anyone who's interested in plant-based baking or sourdough.
Everyone. You
know? No, it's not everyone. I mean, you have to have a genuine interest to mm-hmm. to want to bake. And it's not all just baking. You'll notice there was a whole chapter on dips and accompaniments to bread, stuff to have with bread, because we really want to encourage people to eat plant-based.
Yeah.
We're just filling a little niche here, a little void that we see, which is the plant-based baking sector. But we felt that a book that was a bit more well-rounded and not just bread or not just cake would be more accessible to people, and a book that they could dip in and out of throughout mm-hmm. the year, throughout their lives, and for different occasions, different family members, different generations, you know, maybe making cookies with the kids or making a loaf of bread for the whole family to enjoy. So we wanted it to be just one of those sort of on the shelf all the time go-to cookbooks.
Right on. Yeah. Yeah. Well, and even the section on, I think you called it zero waste, but you know, a large proportion of that is, what do I do with all my sourdough discards as I'm refreshing and stuff, right? And it's like, and I know Maurizio did that in his book as well, and it's helpful as all get out, you know, for folks to, because there's a range, like you've got quite a range in there of things that you can do with leftover product of your own. So I thought it was neat to see, you know, that there's a couple times in the last year and a bit where I've seen cookbooks talking about leftovers in a way that is you know, a lot more inspired than just reheat it and eat it. So, yeah.
Food waste is a global issue, from everything from what's left in the fridge that you've forgotten about, right through to like industrial waste of massive food production and banquets and all you can eat buffet restaurants. And I've catered for events at various points in my life, and it's horrific when you see all the food left at the end of the day. One of the most awful things I witnessed was years ago, Ed and I worked at the Pemberton Music Festival cooking breakfast for all of the emergency services and security staff. And we actually did the breakfast shift. So I was vegan at this point, quite a new vegan, only vegan for a couple of years, maybe. I had to cook all the bacon for everyone's breakfast. And I calculated that I actually cooked about 10,000 rashers of bacon during that festival. It was so disgusting. My hair would be full of pig fat by the end of the shifts. Thank God we had like a nice staff shower unit in this like camping in 40 degrees Celsius disgustingness. But what I noticed was, because it was laid on for the staff, it was basically free for them to eat, and they would pile up the rashers of bacon, you know, 10 rashers on the plate. Whereas if they were paying for it, they probably would have had like 3 or 4 rashers. And then at the end of the breakfast service, most of it was left on the table and being thrown away. And it was actually at that point that I realized I'm never going to cook meat for anyone again. Like, I just can't support this ethically, to not only to cook it and think about what the animal's been through, but also then to see it wasted as well. That to me was just tragic. And actually, it was a pivotal moment in my vegan journey of making that like alliance with my values. Like, I'm not going to work in an industry that supports this in any way ever again. And so I was so delighted when the opportunity came for Ed and I to actually start a business where we could make it plant-based and inspire other people to make their food plant-based as well.
And again, it's like bringing the bakery into the book. Having a zero waste section is something we're both very passionate about, to the fact that, you know, a lot of bakeries will have 20 to 30% wastage at the end of the day because they want a customer to come in and have the full, you know, options there. For us, if you come in an hour or 2 hours before close, we might only have 50% of the menu left. Like, we want to sell out every day. Not that we're lazy and don't make enough. We look at all the data and look at the week before or the year before and match or increase by 10%. But we really want people to have the freshest baked goods in the morning. And then if you come towards the afternoon, it's very sort of European style. You know, a lot of bakeries in Europe are closed by 1, 2 p.m. So it's a bit of a sort of change, but the regulars or people that come know to pre-order online or, you know, come early.
Totally. Totally. Yeah. We were the same way at our shop in Saskatchewan. It's just, you know, we had an outlet for day old bread, but you know, so we had a number of community groups that we worked with and that kind of thing. But the design, in a perfect world, if I had like, you know, one of everything for the last hour.
Yeah.
Okay, good. You know, and so if the last hour everybody's, oh, you got the last one, good for you.
Yeah. No,
then exactly. We were good. And earlier, okay, that's bad planning on my part, perhaps. And then if we got caught out, we needed a home for it.
Yeah, totally. And ours never goes to waste. It goes to local businesses, which then promote us, the staff, or like you said, like food banks.
Or we trade with our farmers.
Yeah.
In the summer when they've got produce available. Well, they'll come to the shop after visiting the markets in the area, and we'll often do a trade. They'll bring us, like at the moment, pumpkins because it's the fall, and we'll give them bread. And it gets to a point, actually, that their staff love the bread so much because they're giving it to their staff that they actually start to ask in the springtime after the winter when they haven't been delivering food. They start growing things and harvesting in the spring. The staff are asking the farm, when are we getting that bread? And then it'll prompt the farmer to contact us and say, hey, I've only got spring greens at the moment, but just want to let you know, like, we'll start trading again soon. So I love the fact. And then we heard from other farms that don't trade with us that the other farm workers get jealous because the farm across the road, they get Ed's bread.
Yeah.
So then,
oh, no, I totally get it. And that's the, I don't know, that's that beautiful community aspect of bakeries that we're able to latch on to if we choose to. And I love it that you do. Yeah. Yeah. I know, like at our shop, it was like a point of pride and it was a point of pride. Yeah. It was important to me that we didn't have a lot of garbage, you know, and that we weren't taking, you know, 17 bags out to the dumpster every day. Right. It was like, keep it tight. And then I've, you know, and since met folks that, you know, have taken it even further. And I've learned from them. It's like, oh, we could have done something differently, you know, and taken even less out. So yeah, no, it's super important for sure. For sure. One of the things I'm curious about, and I think it's for folks that are reading the book, that sort of accessibility to good ingredients. I'm really curious from the bakery perspective as well. How or what's it like for you to source good quality plant-based ingredients? Mm-hmm. You know, and I'll say, you know, for those kind of like those things that are traditionally not vegan, like the butters and the cheeses and the milks and that kind of thing. Is it getting better? Are you having to really hunt? Or are you able to, is it getting more mainstream for you to have access to those raw ingredients for your baking?
I think Canada's still a bit behind. Like, we're going traveling to the UK in a couple of weeks, and they're definitely way further ahead with different brands coming up, you know, pushing the envelope. The thing I find hard is we don't get any subsidies for that from the government. So we are paying so much more for a vegan butter. If we're choosing to do that, it's good for the environment. Why aren't we getting the same percentage subsidies from the government? Like oat milk is an amazing, you know, product to use. It's creamy. Oats are self-pollinators, so they don't take, we don't need bees, we don't need loads of water, and it's great. It's good for you, full of protein.
They're grown in Canada as
grown in Canada.
Oh, of course, yeah.
Again, we use organic Canadian flaxseed. We blend that ourselves weekly, so it's nice and fresh and fine. And we mix that with a plant milk like soy or oat milk. And then that's our egg replacer that we can use in the cinnamon buns or cakes, things like that. That's pretty much our go-to egg replacer. I will use things like starchy vegetables or fruits like banana or sweet potato or apple or something like that, because then you get that binder in baking, but then you also get a bit of sweetness as well. Mm-hmm. So there's definitely, it's not easy to find them, and also they're not always the best to use. So you have to find, okay, well, this block butter from Miyoko's, for example, is best for vegan pastry, whereas the other butters that I use from Earth Balance is more of a margarine type, so that's heavier on oils. So that's going to be different from a different sort of butter. So it's not one fat for everything, like you might think with dairy butter, or we use extra virgin coconut oil or extra virgin olive oil. So different fats for different things. And that's where putting that knowledge into the cookbook and sharing it with the reader, hopefully will make it more approachable and easier, instead of like, it didn't work, I'm done.
right, for sure. For sure. And I was thinking even for folks that are looking to open up the plant-based bakery in Indian Head, so they don't compete with you, or they're going to go to, you know, or something out in Ontario or whatever. It's the, because you're not buying commodity products, or because they're in a different spot on their growth, you know, in terms of new products, it can be a challenge to source. But I thought you did a really decent job in the book of explaining like exactly that, with like the different butter brands and what the differences are and what to look for. That was the one section where I was like, oh, I wish I had that in January. That would have been, you know, because that was what I needed to know when you're looking at this display case of things that you've never looked at this display case before. And the good news is I found vegan butter. The bad news is there's four kinds and I don't know what they are. Yeah. And I don't know what I'm looking at here. So, totally. Yeah.
And like you said earlier, you know, people don't have this sort of income, disposable income now. You know, everything's going up. So we don't want to be sort of wasting money, wasting ingredients if something doesn't work. So that's why we always recommend using a digital scale. So it's as precise as possible, but there are cups in there as well for our American friends. So yeah, I'd always say that it makes it more precise, and just thinking like, what are you trying to replace and what are you trying to achieve with that replacement?
Yeah, absolutely. So all told here, this has been about a 3-year project for you, hasn't it? How long's it been?
So we got the book deal in 2021. Around the time of winning Small Business BC Youth Entrepreneur Award. So I guess we were getting, I think it all stemmed from actually the pandemic, because when we shut down the bakery in March 2020, we launched an online shop within 24 hours, and that got us featured in Forbes, and we were getting lots of notice for doing that, where most other bakeries and businesses had just totally shut their doors. And it was kind of like, be back soon, hopefully. Whereas we were like, oh no, we've got momentum. We've been open 11 months and we got to keep going. Like, we're not shutting down. And it was like, yep, we'll find a way. I remember the customers looking at me on the Sunday and going, are we going to be able to get bread? And I said, yep, we're going to find a way. Don't you worry. And as soon as we shut the doors, it was like, right, how can we get online? And we were taking orders the next day. And it was frantic and it wasn't organized. And we slowly worked out, you know, what kind of website we needed to make it efficient. And we've kind of got a much better system now. But we kept going with all of that. And that earned us some publicity. Small Business BC awarded us Youth Entrepreneur Award. And the publishers, they picked up on us and were like, sourdough's really trendy throughout the pandemic. You know, veganism is actually on the rise. Even if you hear that the trend has died down and this brand's gone out of business or that restaurant's closed, what you're actually seeing is the big brands and the big chains are making their own versions of everything that was already there and making it cheaper. So a lot of the independent vegan businesses are going out of business, but actually the sales of vegan products are continuing to accelerate. And people like yourself are being put on elimination diets for certain health reasons, or they're finding out they're allergic to this, that, and the other. And people are actually starting to look more and more for dairy-free, egg-free, et cetera. So it was, you know, a great time for us to just be present. And our social media following has blown up since the pandemic. Everyone's into sourdough these days, or they know what it is. They love watching Edge shape dough to hip hop. Very therapeutic. People say it's just like a therapy thing half the time, just watching the videos. And so we've just done really well off the back of it to get noticed by Penguin Canada and be offered this deal. And it wasn't great timing, to be honest. We were, you know, 2021 opened up our business, but with very short skeleton team. And when we got the email, I actually had to wait to tell Ed, because he was working from 4 a.m. till 7 p.m., 5 days a week. So then to say like, hey, would you like to write a cookbook? It wasn't great timing, but we can't let go of an opportunity like that. Like, we truly appreciate that opportunity. And we thought, yeah, this could grow into something really fantastic. And this opportunity might not come around again. So we just had to follow it.
But I think ignorance is bliss, because even though you're busy and you're like, oh yeah, we'll take on a book.
Well, we have to.
You're like 100 recipes, 2 recipes a week. They gave us a year to write it. And you're like, 2 a week, you know, to test them and to shoot them and to write them and everything. Mm-hmm. It was an endeavor, but it was a passion project, and we're very proud of, you know, what we've achieved. Obviously, you're always like, we could improve it and tweak it and everything like that, but
That's what the next book's for.
Exactly. You're good.
whoa, Mark. See, let's get this one out. Everyone buy this one.
That's right.
So we have to see this one successful first before we commit to a second one.
Absolutely. Well, and the And did you do your own photography in that as well? Or
I did think about it for about 2 days. And then it was very quick. Once we sort of talked to a few people, talked to the publishers, I was like, I like taking photos, but for social media, you know, I do all of the social media through my phone, and it's a different world when you're talking about professional food photography, all the editing. And the publishers sort of gave us a short list of who they'd worked with before, based in Vancouver or BC. And we worked with an amazing photographer, Janice, who's Vancouver based. She's done 10 or 11 books with Penguin before, so she knew the format. That's the other thing, you know. Okay, we need this shot to begin the chapter, for example. Mm-hmm. So, and we need a few double page spread shots, you know, things, process shots, you know. For me to be setting up a tripod, doing the process, she was like, okay, move to the left, to the right. And she was amazing. Like, I would 100% work with Janice again. She's an incredible lady, very talented. So yeah, it was awesome having her, but no food stylist. I'd have Natasha there with me giving, you know, feedback, helping with all the mountains of dishes that it created. And obviously being a chief taste tester, which is a hard job, but, you know, she gives me honest feedback, which is really important.
Oh yeah. Yeah, for sure. Well, and that's neat because it's two different types of storytelling then, because you've got that you wrote and what Janice did with the photos and marrying those up. And it,
yeah, I mean, I've got a shout out to Natasha. She's on there, Ed Tan with Natasha Tan. A lot of the knowledge in sort of veganism, the environmental side, the sustainability, but also sort of, you know, streamlining my ranting methods and things like that. So she was my partner in crime, and we definitely it was a 50-50 split on everything.
Right on. Oh, absolutely.
It's a whole lot of work writing a cookbook. It's not even just the writing of it. The editing of it takes just as long as the writing. And it's like being back at school when you hand in an essay and then the teacher gives it back to you with the red pen over it. I don't know if kids have it like that now because of technology. I don't know how they submit homework and things. But in our day, you got sent your work back with red pen, and then you'd have to do it again. And then you think, okay, I hand it back in, and it comes back. When you're writing a book, it comes back to you multiple times. One editor will look at it, send it back with questions and crossed out bits and suggestions, and you have to modify the whole thing. And then you send it off again. And then a few weeks later, another editor's looked at it and done the same thing. And it goes on and on. And sometimes these recipes, you think, this is just a cookie. Like, how can they have this much to say about something so simple? But they really do. And the measurements was a big learning curve as well, because as Ed mentioned earlier, you know, bakers, professional bakers, and probably quite skilled home bakers prefer to use a scale to make it accurate. And a lot of amateur bakers and home cooks prefer the cups, because cups are so easy, aren't they? You just throw it in there. But unfortunately, with baking, it is more scientific and needs to be a bit more exact than, say, making a curry at home. You know, if you're making a curry or some sort of dinner type thing, I think you can cook a bit more soulful and just kind of put in what you feel like. But with baking, it won't turn out quite right if you do that. So we really struggled to get it right between having cups to make it accessible for home cooks and also having the grams. And if it should be grams, and do we do imperial and metric, or is that too much information? And there was a whole load of back and forth on that with the publishers. A lot more time spent on that than probably people could ever imagine.
Sure, sure. No, I can. I it's hitting home to me on a very small scale to do it with 100 recipes across the range of different items that are in the book. That's an attention to detail that I don't know that I have. I've got nothing but admiration for both of you and the team behind it. Oh my God.
Yeah. Ignorance is bliss. Like, when you deal, that's definitely not what you think about. But anyway, it was a learning experience. And like I said, like, one that as a young chef, you dream about, one, opening a restaurant, and two, writing some sort of cookbook. So the fact I've been able to achieve both of those in the last few years is Yeah, I'm pretty proud.
Oh, that's awesome. Good for you. Yeah, good for both of you. Well, and so how does this work now with Penguin? Because I've heard you mention London already and the States. Like, how does it get released, or where are people going to be able to find this when it launches in November? Is it going to be just in Canada, or is it going further afield? Or
yeah, totally. Thanks for asking. So you'll be able to buy. You can pre-order it now, depending on when this is going to air. But it's available November the 7th worldwide. So you can get it through Amazon. .com and just change the address if you're in Europe or in the UK, .co.uk, or obviously here in Canada, .ca, or Indigo also stock it. Or if you jump on Penguin and just search Bread Cookbook, they've got a great feature where it says shop local. So you can put in your zip code or postal code, and it will show you a local bookstore, and you should be able to order it through there. So you can support local, which we firmly believe in. The good thing about Amazon is that all the sales with that go towards our first weeks of sales. And then obviously you've got the reviews and things like that, which is quite a good feature. But the reason we're doing the launch in the UK is we're both from the UK. It just felt like natural. My brother has bars and event space in London, so it's kindly offered us to use that space. So we're doing that on November the 1st, a week early. So we've got some books available there. We're going to get some media, some social influencers. So it should be fun. And then we'll be back in Canada to do some events here, like Cornucopia in Whistler. We're going to do sort of a talk Q&A at the library. What else are we doing? More podcasts.
A bookstore signings. Yeah, it's just like parties and signings and tastings and all of that. So we're still finalizing a lot of this, you know, because we're still a little bit away out now.
Sure.
So, every day it's like interviews and planning book launch parties.
well if they bring you down to Victoria, let me know. I'll come to whatever bookstore and
definitely
and say hi for sure.
Good bookstore there, haven't you?
Oh, we've got a couple, but Monroe's and Boland Books they're always doing book signings and stuff, and I know Monroe's, which is right by where I live. That's the one downtown. Every time there's a new I feel so lucky these days, because I can go to Monroe's and go to the cookbook area. It's there, right? And so it'll be there for sure.
They'll have it in. Of it when you see it. Then.
I will. I'll send it to you for sure. Yeah. Well, and the reason I asked about sort of distribution was because I have a friend in Australia who wrote a novel last year, and it came out, and I didn't understand how it worked, and it launched in the U.S. and it launched in Australia, and it was set in the story was set in Ireland, and it took a lot of negotiation to get it released in Ireland, you know, because they don't just, it's not ubiquitous, you know? And so it's really cool that you're...
I think Australia is a little bit behind. I don't know if that's because of shipping or why that is, but they weren't, you can pre-order it everywhere, but in Australia, I think it was like only until 6 weeks out that you could pre-order. So it's available now. It is also available as a Kindle as well. So if people, you know, like to use cookbooks, they can just sort of, you know, wipe it down. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. Oh, well, good for you. I'm thrilled for both of you. Thrilled at your success, I guess. And the visibility that you have and are going to continue to get with the launch of this, but I don't want that to downplay just the amount of effort that you put into this. Like, this is, it's not lost on me how bloody hard it is to put a volume like this together, you've got all my admiration for doing the work to get this done, and then to make something that's got just such a range of information and flavor ideas and, you know, product ideas across the board. It's a real tour de force. So
amazing. Good for you too. Thank you for your kind words and support, Mark. We really appreciate
it. Yeah. And one last question before we go, and it's unrelated to the book, if it's okay. Yeah. But I noticed just on the emails that I got from you that are you set up as a B Corp?
Yes.
So can I ask a bit about that? Because I've got friends in the States that are set up as B Corps, but I didn't know that it was even impossible in Canada. And that's my own ignorance, but how does it work here?
We're apparently the CEO of WeBC, which used to be the Women's Institute, emailed me recently about something and mentioned, which I had no idea about, that we were one of the first small businesses in BC to become B Corp certified. So that's kind of cool. I know Persephone Brewing on the Sunshine Coast. I know they are a B Corp as well. There's certainly a lot of Vancouver food brands that are B Corp as well, but as far as like being a bakery in Canada that's B Corp, like I think there's us and one other, but the other one is on the other side of Canada and they are more of a wholesale bakery, and they sell like bread to supermarkets and things, crackers and stuff. Like what we do, being a kind of, I hate this expression, but mom and pop shop kind of thing, making kind of, you know, with a storefront open to our local community, that's quite unusual. So B means benefit, and it means that our social and environmental impact has been assessed by a third party and awarded a certification based on getting to 80 points. So points are awarded for certain things. For us, we got a lot of points because we proved that we sourced locally. We proved that we sourced organically. And this isn't like, it doesn't have to be 100% organic, but about 80% organic, local, and that we do more than that. You know, we've eliminated animals from our supply chain. So all of those ethical welfare standards for how chickens are raised, for example, they don't really apply to us. We're kind of beyond that. We don't touch the chickens at all. We leave them be. And then also we donate 1% of our revenue to environmental and animal causes. So to date, we've donated over $20,000. And we have a partner charity that we work with, Trees for the Future, they're called. And for every, we just had to recently change it because the costs have got a bit out of control. But for every two coffees, it used to be every coffee, but for every two coffees that we sell, we plant a tree. And so we've planted almost 70,000 trees as well. So that's equivalent, I think, to a small forest, I would say. So we are a small business with big impact. It's way more than just bread and treats, as far as we're concerned. And that's actually what gets us up every day at 5 a.m. or earlier to go about our business. We put on our superhero capes. We fly into the bakery and make all the delicious foods and keep going. So,
but what I'd want to add to that, Mark, is the fact that it's also down to our staff, how we look after our staff, because being BC based, if anyone's listening and interested in applying, we're always looking for, you know, keen staff who want to be part of a good team and, you know, work for a company that is environmentally, you know, and sustainable. Don't just talk about it. You know, we pay a living wage, above a living wage. We have great benefits, all those things.
I will be up to visit for sure. My God. Yeah. Well, because I the last time we talked, Ed, that I remember that quite clearly, the struggle that you were having in Whistler and saying, you know, my staff can't afford to live here, or if my staff can't afford to live here, we have a problem, right? Like, you know, and all of the service industries there do, and it, you know, and in the 2 years since we talked, it's only gotten worse in Victoria and in Vancouver, and I'm assuming in Whistler as well, right? Like it's a real challenge.
Mm-hmm. It is. We've even seen the ski resort Whistler Blackcomb are now putting ads in the local paper looking for staff housing, and yet they are one of the biggest landowners in the and they could build more staff housing on their land, or they own hotels. So when you see that happening, you're like, wow, like this problem is really widespread and not going away.
And so I'm curious, is it, have you found, or I guess how do you think about it for the two of you, for your bakery? I'm not looking for magic solutions, but I'm just curious if there's any, how you're framing that in your own minds that you can sort of make progress in that area and keep your staff around.
It's a worldwide issue, like I mentioned. I don't, and like you said, it's happening in Victoria, Vancouver. I've got friends in the UK. I think it's just to inspire young people that, you know, and it comes from work ethic, starting work early. And it might not be, you might not stay in hospitality forever, but it's really important that, you know, it doesn't die out and we don't just go to like take out all the time. You know, going out and eating at a restaurant or supporting a local bakery is really, really important for our culture, really. So I think it's, you know, the fact of sort of parents, young parents sort of getting their kids out into the workplace, even if it's for a few years, washing dishes, prepping in kitchens, whatever. And then for anyone that wants to stay in it professionally, there is, if you work for a good company that pay you well, it's very rewarding. And, you know, you can feed people, which is a joy for me. I've been in kitchens for over 25 years and still love feeding people and getting reviews and feedback from customers.
Right on. Thank you. Yeah, it's a topic that's near and dear to my heart. I was talking with Anastasia French a couple episodes ago from the Living Wage BC or Living Wage for Families in BC and I think it's kind of, I don't think anyone thinks it's going to solve the problem for us business owners, but at least we're talking about it. So I thought I'd bring it up because I know that it's important to you folks. So cool. Well, thanks again for taking the time to do this. And I just wish you huge success with the bakery, the launch of the book, the two of you, everything.
Great.
Well, thank you, Mark.
Hopefully we'll see you at the bakery or we'll do this again in a couple of years.
So yeah, sounds good. Sounds good.
Victoria for a book signing.
Yeah.
I'll see you there for sure. Oh boy, what a lot of fun. I'm excited for them. I really am. I think you get the sense through this call. I think we all have this dream. Well, I'll speak for myself. I have this dream. Oh yeah, I'd love to be an author. I'd love to write a book. I'd love to get it out in the world and to get accolades and all of that stuff. Or just to have one person say that was a good book. That's probably enough. But you know, what got me with it is the part where Natasha was talking about, oh yeah, well, yeah, you can write anything once, but then you have to deal with all the edits when it comes back to you. And it's like, oh, I don't know if I have the stomach for that. That, honest to goodness, like I can do this podcast for you and I can put it out in the world and then I get to do another one. When I have to do multiple versions of an intro because I keep screwing up or keep forgetting things, it makes me crazy. I couldn't do that on a 300-page book. I don't know how I could. And so I have a lot of admiration for authors that do that. And some of the cookbook authors that have been on this show, especially, you know, and I'm very, very glad that at the end of the talk that we were able to talk about their experience of becoming a B Corp and why and what they're going for. It's very important to me. And I thought it's really neat to know that we've got in Canada at a retail bakery, someone making those decisions and setting that direction and really going for it. And I'm super happy for them. And I'm really impressed by what they're trying to do. You know, I'm going to put a plug for involving other people in this. I'm learning myself a little bit, like with the work that I did with Leah this year, made the podcast better. Having someone to work with on the show, as opposed to trying to do absolutely everything myself. And so when they were talking about, you know, I could do all the photography myself, but how about we get like a top-notch photographer in, you know, how about we work with a publisher for distribution and that kind of stuff, and actually we'll build a team to do this thing. Maybe that's how the big stuff happens, right? Maybe that's the way that we can break out of whatever we're stuck in is by actually embracing the team a little bit. At Orange Boot, we did a lot of that, working with the team, bringing the team in, saying, hey, Cindy and I can't figure all this stuff out on our own. We need this help. And that was one level within the team. What I wasn't very good at was working with outsiders outside of our core team to make something even bigger or make something even more impactful. Maybe bigger is the wrong word. Having a larger impact by bringing in excellent people that aren't part of this core team. And so I was moved by just that little snippet of the conversation. That was a big hit for me that came out in some other conversations as well that I've had over the last couple of weeks. So that was really good. I was just so impressed. This is a book that you really should take a look at. Honest to goodness, the flavors that they use, I guess maybe that's the other learning that I have is this cookbook is one of the, we've had a lot of chefs on the show. Let me put it this way. We've had a lot of chefs on the show and I do my best because I'm not a chef. I'm a baker and I'm a baker brought up on a very specific tradition on and a specific scope of baking and the baking that I'm good at and the baking that I feel that I know. And so I've talked with chefs and I try and hold my own in the conversation, but I don't have that thing in me, or I haven't developed that part of my brain that starts pulling flavors together and says, oh yeah, let's put kimchi in a scone. I do not have that. And then I read their book and it's like, oh, look at that. That's interesting. You know, that's not something that I would do. And I think if you read this book, maybe you're a kimchi scone person from way back. You're one of the OG kimchi scone folks. But there's something else in this book that you're going to find that is going to surprise you. I think that is the value of having chef thinking in with bakery thinking and merging that all together and marrying that all up. And I guarantee you, if you have that gene in your body, you're going to take this and you're going to just be inspired and you're going to start pulling your own connections up and putting your own connections together. And that's going to be really cool too. Love to hear what you come up with. So anyways, that's all for this week. It's been great to do another show. It's been great to be able to share this with you. It's been great to talk to Natasha and Ed again and hear about what they're doing. So until next time, when we're back with another conversation with another bakery owner from somewhere in the world, have a good week. Happy Thanksgiving in the States eventually. Work hard, bake lots, stay healthy and safe. Happy baking. Bye-bye.